And as I said, this is the KRFY Morning Show. We have guests in the studio, people organizing and hosting Yuriati's Village. Did I say that right, Jennifer?
That's Yuriati's Village.
Yuriati's Village. We have Jennifer Crooks. I would say you're the...
I'm the director.
The director.
And the founder, correct?
And
yes.
Founder. Yeah. Okay. And we'll hear all about Yuriati's Village after...
Right. And I'll mention we have two other guests with us as well from Yuriati's Village. It's Sarah Clintworth and Eric Keller. Say hi, Sarah and Eric.
Hello.
Hello.
All right. Thanks for being here. And Yuriati's Village is an orphanage in Africa that Jennifer founded. And it's a fascinating story. So I'm looking forward to talking with them today.
Yeah, we've had you in the studio before. We've heard all about it, but you know we have new listeners all the time, so we want to get a little bit of a history and then an update because you've been very busy over the last bit of time. Before we get to our interview, let's hear from the National Weather Service. It's currently 54 degrees on this Wednesday, August 10th. Today, we can expect a 30% chance of showers in the morning with thunderstorms about 20% in the afternoon. High today, 72, and low tonight, 52. Still a 20% chance of thunderstorms. Then, patchy fog. Tomorrow, Thursday, and I'm sure Dinah will be glad if this showers ends. The festival at Sandpoint is hoping for clear skies on Thursday. High of 81. And Thursday night, low of 54, partly cloudy.
Sounds like nice weather for the festival.
It's sunshine all the way after Thursday.
And, of course, the festival is the big thing going on around town this week. They have four concerts on the main stage, starting with Angelique Kidjo tomorrow.
And did you know that right after the morning show, right after Bird Notes, we have an exclusive interview that Jim Healy did with Angelique Kidjo yesterday, and so we're going to play that. It's very interesting.
All right.
It's
that's a great. Short. So that's going to come right after the end of this show. It'll be right around 9 o'clock.
That's right. It's about a 15-minute interview. Yeah.
And then to continue with the festival calendar, the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band is playing Friday. On Saturday, it's Ben Harper. And then on Sunday, it's the grand finale with the Spokane Symphony. And all those acts are going to be just excellent. Other things going on around town this week, we have the Bonner County Fair going on. The fair setup was yesterday. Actually, people started going to the fair. The fair is going to run through Saturday, and it's a great connection to our agricultural history here. I'm just wondering, our guests, do you guys ever go to the fair?
Yep, I've been to the fair a few times.
Uh-huh. With your kids, I bet.
Yeah, with the kids.
Yeah. Do you have livestock that
we don't, kids in not at yeah. the fair, but the kids still enjoy going and seeing all the local livestock.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously the livestock and the animals are really a great attraction. There's exhibits all over the place. And it's actually, there's some really great places to eat. So it's...
I agree. Fair food is pretty hard to beat.
Yeah, fair food.
It's a good thing it's only once a year, though.
yeah, exactly. So, and there's a lot of other things going on around town that if we have time at the end of the show, we'll go through the calendar. However, our calendar is online at carefy.org. It's the complete entertainment calendar for the town. So you can check in there to see the details of everything going on in town. And with that, let's get on into our interview. We have again with us Jennifer Crooks. She's the founder and director of Yuriati's Village. And Jennifer, can you pronounce the word for us?
You know, people pronounce it a couple of different ways, but Yuriati's, the way you're saying it, or Yuriati's, both work.
Okay. And what is that language?
It's actually the name. It's named after a horse, a Grand Prix horse that I've had for 10 years. And that mare brought me to the top of our sport. She's a really, really special horse, and the name Yuriati is actually, it's a Hindu festival, that brings the community together to uplift the children. And so between her bringing us to the level of the sport where we could found this nonprofit and the meaning of her name.
Oh, interesting.
The nonprofit after.
Yeah. Huh. And again, we have Sarah Clintworth also with your organization. Sarah, what's your position?
I'm the community outreach coordinator, so I do a lot of communicating with our sponsors and then working with you know, organizing things like this interview or other community events for, you know, whether it's fundraising or just connecting with the community. And I hope to do a lot of that in Ethiopia as well, so that the work that we're doing there can kind of infiltrate the whole community as opposed to just being kind of a little nucleus of activity.
Okay. And finally, we also have with us Eric Keller. And Eric, you are a builder.
Yes. And currently living in Ethiopia.
Oh, okay.
Getting the orphanage started.
Yes. Do you work here in Sandpoint as well? Is this your home?
I have done.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Eric, I have to say, signed on for 3 months. 3 months ago, we had a fate meeting. We met at Evans Brothers when we did a coffee night there. And Eric signed up to go over for 3 months. And after about 2 months, I was over there. And he was doing a great job getting the building going. And I said, "You're not really going to leave in a month, are you? Because that's not going to go well if you do." And he's actually back right now getting a 2-year visa. And he's going to go over and kind of follow through with the building project. So he has been a godsend for us.
So Jennifer, let's get the backstory here. Tell us, what is Oryades Village and how did it come to be? And you're local, of course.
Yeah.
Yes.
I live here. I've been here 8 years now.
Okay.
Oryades Village is a nonprofit that's focused around creating self-sustainability for orphanages and rural communities and uplifting the community as well as just the orphan village. We started in Soto, the town we're in Ethiopia, about a year and a half ago, and we're granted some land and are underway now building our village there. And something that really is important to us and kind of differentiates us is that our goal is to create self-sustainability and empower the local community instead of creating for independence. And so our goal is within a 7 to 10 year period that the village that we're building will be fully self-sustainable.
And tell us how you were inspired to start this.
I have a lot of kids. I have 13 children, 8 through international adoption. 3 are from Ethiopia. And when I first went to Ethiopia now 7 years ago, I just fell in love with the country and the people. And the poverty level there is like nothing you can imagine living here. You know, people are literally dying of starvation. And it just seemed to me that after adopting and realizing I couldn't adopt all the kids in the world, that I needed to do something for the kids that were going to remain in their home countries in orphan situations and trying to create a sustainable solution for those kids and reaching more kids than just through adoption. So the idea was kind of born to create orphan villages where the kids live in a family style atmosphere and can grow up and have as normal lives as possible in their home countries.
And what was the process? So you have an idea. You're living in Sandpoint, Idaho. Now, you've been to Ethiopia because you've adopted from Ethiopia. But did you have to work with government agencies in order to?
Yeah, I mean, we had to. We're a nonprofit in the U.S. and in Canada now. So we had to go through both the U.S. government and the Canadian government to get our nonprofit status. We partner with a nonprofit on the ground in Ethiopia right now and are actually in the process of getting our nonprofit status also in Ethiopia so that we can function more independently. But yeah, it's a lot of government red tape. It's a learning curve. I had the idea. I kind of started it with my best friend. She's a lawyer in New York, so she helped me with a lot of the red tape. And we kind of put the word out, this is what we're doing, and just an amazing group of people have come together. Our team's really, really dedicated. There's specialties in a lot of different areas. The leader of our, we practice the principles of permaculture, and that's really the foundation of the self-sustainability that we're trying to create over there. And the leader that we have working with us in permaculture is a man named Warren Brush, and he's one of the top 3 permaculture experts in the world and has been putting permaculture villages into Africa for 20 years. He's been a huge asset to our team. So it's kind of, you know, if you build it, they will come. And we started the nonprofit and just an amazing team's come together to make it happen.
From past interviews, you talked about how initially it started with your idea and your kind of a heart response to the situation in Ethiopia and brought in some people. And originally it was the Jumping World who responded to start the project. And have you found a lot of support outside of the Jumping World since then?
We're still primarily funded by the show Jumping World. We have actually now just put out some, we have some good leads on some grants. We have two grants that look very promising, which we're very excited about, that are outside the horse world. And through Warren's permaculture connections, we're starting to get some backing from the permaculture world as well. And obviously, we continue to look for corporate funding. We have one corporation that's now getting behind us as well. So we're starting to spread.
I think the last time we talked, you hadn't even broken ground, or you had just broken ground in the building. And you, Eric. Sorry.
Yes.
Eric, you kind of stepped in and really probably made a big difference. I don't know if right now you want to start the update on where you're at, but where is the building construction project at?
Well, projects in Ethiopia get pretty complicated. So for me, agility has been probably the key attribute. And there's been a lot of things to sort out that aren't just building, but at this point, we have two foundations built, and we're starting into the walls. We have two more houses that are getting underway.
Yeah, Eric's brought us from zero to four houses moving in the last couple of months. And you know what he's talking about, the challenges that he faces there. I mean, you know, here you go to the store, you go to Home Depot, and you buy everything you need. There you go to the screw booth, and you ask for a screw, and they bring you a screwdriver. No, please, I need a screw. And they bring you a nail. And so it's a really, you know, I mean, it takes five times longer to be able to just get the building supplies, let alone get it started. And, you know, it's been a learning curve for us, but we got a handle on it now.
What's the predominant language in Ethiopia? Is it
Amharic?
There's not many English speakers there? Is that?
Most people have had a little bit of English in school.
Mm-hmm.
But the range of ability is big.
Yeah. So you, at this point, you're still under construction. How are you going to connect with the kids that need shelter?
We have now 35 children in our care. We have a rental facility, and so we have 20-something babies, 23 babies now, I think, and then we have some older kids. We're the only orphanage that takes special needs kids in our area, and so we have two amazing little ones that are deaf, and we have a little boy with epilepsy, and then we have a waiting list now, but the facility that we rent is full, and so until we have our houses built, we can't really accept any more kids.
The land that you've acquired to build the Yerades Village is on the edge of a large town community. How many people in that community? What's the name of that community and that town, and how many people are in it? And what's the interaction between the community in Ethiopia and the work that you're doing? Response.
Our town's called Soto, and the population's about 300,000. It is actually a small town, even with that population. It doesn't feel that big. It's a lot of the surrounding area. But the local government is very supportive of our project. We're really excited about that. We have right now a 2.5-acre compound, and we have been basically given now the land next door, which is 5 acres, to expand on. The government's really making a push for food stability, and so they're very excited about the permaculture practices, and they're excited about us being able to teach that to the local farmers and to the local agriculture extension offices. And so they said, you know, if we give you this land next door for your own use, can we use that as a training center? Will you teach the local farmers? And of course we said yes, because you know, big part of our mission is to uplift the entire community in as many ways as we can. And so the government support's been really critical and exciting.
Well, and I think also, if I can add to that, you know, part of what we want to do is avoid the dynamic of being like, we're going to come into your country and like change it, and here you go, you know, we're just going to kind of force these ideas on you. And so that's a big part of what I would really like to be working on too, is not just education, but building connections with the local community so that it isn't about us coming in and rescuing them or inserting our ideas into their world, but to collaborate and to really understand what they want and what's going to work for them, and then to see how we can try to meet them in that place.
And also us learning from them. I mean, that is one of the big principles of permaculture. I mean, the depth of knowledge in Ethiopia is huge. And, you know, every time we go there and we, you know, we share our knowledge, I think the knowledge we take away is even greater than what we're able to share. I mean, it's a real give and take with the community, and they teach us so much as well.
An exchange of ideas, because they have ancient practices, agricultural practices that can be integrated into this idea of permaculture.
Well, permaculture is actually happening in Ethiopia. Mm-hmm. I mean, you drive by the old farms, and when you have the, you know, the grandfather and the older generations, you can see a permaculture forest right there. You can see a food forest with the banana trees and the vines and the leaves, and, you know, everything is there. It's just, it's actually been the Western world that's come in and taught the wrong kind of farming with the monocrop farming and all that. And it's really about going back to their ways. They're actually the ones who knew how to grow food. And we learned that from them. And now it's kind of having to reintegrate that into their society and undo what we've done.
Is this part of Ethiopia a dry, or is it a, is it more tropical? How do you characterize it?
It seems to me that it gets a fair amount of moisture. I mean, you go driving from Addis Ababa, which is the capital, down to Soto, and you go through some areas that are very dry and clearly suffer from drought. But the area that we're working in is pretty lush. I mean, it's quite green. I don't know what the annual rainfall is, but I wouldn't say it's a desert area.
And the water source is wells?
The water source, I mean, it's river water. There are wells. It's hard to, there's not a lot of well digging equipment in Ethiopia. There's two well diggers that everybody knows about, and they're extremely expensive. I mean, to dig a well on our property is about $80,000. It's twice the price it would cost here due to the well equipment rental, you know, there. We're doing a lot of rain catchment. That's the principle for us with water. And this last trip, we actually put in much of the rain catchment system. Eric has two huge tanks up on one of the buildings, and we were able to pipe the entire property, which is kind of exciting, and have faucets in different areas and really work with the water that we're able to save so that it works through the land.
So that's gutters on buildings that you save, mostly get the water from?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And it goes into these underground cisterns?
They're up on a tower.
Because you don't have to worry about freezing.
Yeah.
So... go ahead, Chris.
Well, I was going to remind our listeners that this is the 88.5 KRFY morning show with Chris and Susie, and we're speaking this morning with three folks from Eriades Village, Jennifer Crooks, the founder, Sarah Clintworth, and Eric Keller. So you must have a lot of challenges. I mean, you've already been describing a lot of the challenges. I'm curious. I'd like to revisit that question of how the kids get to you. Is there a government agency that's kind of aiming them to you, or do families come and say, we need help with our child?
No, the children are all governed through the Ministry of Women's and Orphans Affairs, MOA. And there's MOA on multiple different levels, town MOA, regional MOA, zonal MOA. They're very, very conscientious about kids that come into the orphanage system, because obviously that is not the best place for a child. And so if there are any other options for kids, extended family, that MOA will research that and try to find a family member to take care of that child. But often the case, that doesn't happen. Children are abandoned quite frequently. We have probably a baby we get called about twice a month in our area. And, you know, these are mostly young mothers who, if they go back to their town, they're going to be shunned. They're going to be kicked out of their family, and they have no way to take care of this baby. And so really all they can do is abandon that child and hope that that baby's found and cared for. So those babies are brought into our system. The local government actually does spend time trying to research that baby, taking the picture of the baby around to local towns. Does anybody know this child? They really do try to put the child back with the family, but oftentimes it doesn't happen. Then children with special needs, older children, are also abandoned. We have one little girl, Hannah. She's 10. She came in February. And she was found wandering in a town, kind of unable to explain where she's from because she can't speak because she's deaf. And so she couldn't, there was no way to find her family. She was kind of able to explain through sign language that she had siblings, and the understanding that we got is they couldn't take care of her, so they took her to another town. She said she wasn't from the town that she was found in. And again, this is all through sign language. And, you know, it's not the fault of the family. You know, I'm sure they're in a destitute situation. They're starving, you know, so it's not like they want to do this with their children. But really, they don't have another option. And Hannah's just the most delightful, amazing little girl. She's very emotionally secure. She obviously was well cared for by her family. But they couldn't take care of anymore. And so we got a call and she came to us. And
I actually, we had an article in The Reader about a month ago, I believe. And that was, for me, that was a really powerful story because it was such a, the ability that we have to make a difference came down to such a tiny little window of time. You know, we were there. The MOA woman wanted us to come and visit one of their facilities where they kind of keep children until they figure out where they're going to go. And in the matter of a couple hours, we were able to take this little girl who had nowhere to go and give her a safe, you know, loving place to live where she can go to school. She can start, you know, kind of building towards a much better future for herself. And that was, for me, that was a really, just a really cool experience to see how that change that we can affect is so powerful. And it's not that hard to do. I mean, it is hard, but at the same time, it can happen so easily. So
direct results.
Yeah.
Right in front of you.
And that's part of our, you know, with these kids too, is also being able to teach these kids the practices of permaculture and how they can feed themselves and how they can take care of their families. You know, especially the kids with handicaps, it's really hard for them to make a life for themselves when they grow up. But if they have these farming techniques, if they can speak English, you know, those are two things that are fairly easy for us to teach, then it just gives them a big jump ahead when they're grown up and need to find their place in life.
Is there a component with Yurati's Village with an adoption? I know, Jennifer, you've adopted children from Ethiopia. That's how it kind of you became aware of what was going on. So through Yurati's Village, is there, or does that go back to the Women's Children's Center?
Yeah, it is actually MOA in the country that's in charge of adoption, but adoption shut down in Ethiopia. It shut down for non-special needs children about 3 years ago due to corruption. Ethiopia is still trying to figure out a system where children can be adopted in a less corrupt manner. Similar thing that happened in China a few years before that, when you have people, you know, Americans coming in and they, the agencies basically pay the orphanages for children. And so it can lead to a lot of corruption, sadly. So adoption is shut down. Our children are not available for adoption except locally. We actually are quite excited. We just were approved by the local government to foster adoptions to local families. And that's a really new thing in Ethiopia. But through the local churches, there's 50-something families who are interested in adopting. And if we can find local homes for our infants, that's obviously the best place for babies to grow up. So there is a hope for adoption, but it is local adoption, which ultimately is a better solution for kids anyway.
Well, is it likely that they'll allow international adoptions in the future, and would that be part of your program then?
You know, for us, I think it's really, I've learned a lot, you know, kind of going through this process, and I really think that children without special needs should grow up in their birth country, if at all possible. That's where they belong. I do think the kids with special needs are good candidates for adoption because Ethiopia just can't meet a lot of those needs. We do have a couple of kids who are pre-approved for international adoption, our older kids, due to their special needs, but it's very hard to find homes for kids with special needs here, there, anywhere. Mm-hmm. But I really think our focus will be to keep the kids in their community and foster local adoptions.
Mm-hmm. Are your caregivers, their staff?
We have a great team of nannies. Our head nanny, Sister Amrach, is just a piece of work.
She's like a nanny superhero.
She is.
She needs a cape.
She does. She's a very strong, very funny lady. She's kept the kids alive for 3 years. This orphanage program that was existent before us. We took over an existing orphanage that had no funding, but they went for 3 years with no funding. And she barely got paid. The nannies barely got paid. She wouldn't let the nannies leave. You know, they were trying to quit. And she was like, you can't quit. These babies will die. Sit down, stay. And when she tells you to sit and stay, you sit and stay. Like, she's serious. And so the team of nannies that functions under her guidance are just really, really neat women. Very lucky to have her.
You called her sister?
Yeah, she's a nurse, and that's what they call nurses. She is actually Catholic, but many of the nurses in Ethiopia are called sister. That's just the
terminology. She's not a nun. This country, we call the nuns
sister. Yeah. No, she's not a nun.
She's very sassy. I don't think she could do the nun thing.
But she's a superhero.
She is nanny. A superhero.
So you have a lot of support in your host country there. Really, it's not a host country. You're part of what's going on. It's an integration of two countries in a way.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, I was saying, I mean, I know Eric feels the same way now. We've both been. I was there 2 weeks in May, 2 weeks in June, 2 weeks in July. He's been there for the last 3 months. I'm not sure whether I live here or there. And I'm not sure whether, you know, where I'd rather live. I mean, I love it there. I love the people there. I love our project and our town. And, you know, I was saying last time I was there, I almost have as many friends in Soto now as I have in Sandpoint. It's a very welcoming community. There's not a lot of anti-white sentiment there. Ethiopia is the only African country never to be colonized by white people, and so there's a lot less aggression. There's a little bit, but I mean, you feel really at home. I feel really safe and at home in Soto.
When you have a work project, and as you said, Eric, it's very slow at times, but do you call in the local community to come out and pick up a shovel?
Oh,
I know, Jennifer, you've had a shovel in your hand. I've seen pictures, and probably Sarah, too, and work together on a bigger project.
Yeah, of course, and the community is interested in helping, so people show up at the gate whenever there's a project to help with, and people are eager for the work that is available.
Who is your regular building crew? Is it Westerners or is it a combination?
No, it's locals. It's one locals. Guy okay. lives next door. I can yell if I need him. Works out pretty good.
That's been really important for us is, you know, even just to have, you know, we have one or two Western people there, but to really incorporate the local community. And they are really eager to help. Our two agriculture managers are Ethiopian, our head of child care is Ethiopian, you know, really trying to keep it an Ethiopian managed program with just a little bit of, you know, teamwork and collaboration with us.
Mm-hmm. And I'd like to add something to that too. I think one of the most important things, at least from what I can see and what I think we all feel, is that that dynamic of like us and them, you know, we're really trying to break that down. We worked during the February trip. We had a guy from the Peace Corps who had been in that community for over 2 years. And after he had spent about a week with us at the end of our trip there, I asked him what he thought the locals felt towards us. And he said, you know, I think they respond much better to what you guys are doing here because you have gone out of your way to like learn their names and to talk with them and to explain what's going on. He said, they look to me like they really appreciate that. And that I feel like that is definitely heading in the direction of there's not really any fundamental differences between any of us there, whether we're from Sandpoint or from Soto. We're all just people and we just happen to want to make a difference in this community.
Working together on a very important project that everyone feels emotionally connected to and connected to in many ways. We're going to take a quick musical break. I want to come back and hear really the nitty-gritty of where you're at in the project and kind of the timeline and what we're looking for in the next few months and what is needed, connecting to your website and things like that. But we're talking with component people of Yorati's Village, Jennifer Crooks, Sarah Clintworth, and Eric Keller. We'll be right back. This is a New Seekers song. It's called I'd Like to Teach the World to Sing. And we'll be right back. And that's the New Seekers with I'd Like to Teach the World to Sing.
And we are in the studio this morning with three folks from Yorati's Village. It's an orphanage in a sustainable educational group that's based in, it's based in Sandpoint, but it's, the work is all being done in Ethiopia. And the three we have with us are Jennifer Crooks, Sarah Clintworth, and Eric Keller. And we're gonna, we want to dig in some more on where you're at with your current construction projects. But you do have an event happening tonight. So, Sarah, can you tell us about that?
Yeah, actually, a good friend of ours, her name is Lacey, she has an organization called Extraordinary Nature, and she's really passionate about providing high-density, nutritious food for kids. And so she actually organized this event. A lot of very hard work went into this. It's called Feed the Kids. It's happening at 9 o'clock tonight in the Granary District Warehouse on Oak Street. And this is a 21 and older event because it's going to be pretty fun. But a lot of live music, yoga fire, tribal dance performances, several DJs, including Closey, who is a pretty well-known international DJ. I believe she's from Australia. I think that's what Lacey said. And it's just a really good event that is also going to be partly funding what we do with the orphanage in Ethiopia. So she was kind enough to want to use this event to try to benefit Uradi's village as well as what she is passionate about.
Okay, so that's 9 o'clock tonight at the Granary. And mm-hmm. You can get details on that on our community calendar on carefy.org or on sandpointonline.com. You can buy tickets in advance, but I think you can just show up at the door and get a ticket there as well. Sounds like it's going to be, aside from being supporting a great cause, it's going to be a lot of fun as well.
Yeah, I would thoroughly agree with that.
So
that's really trying to bring a little bit more awareness to our own community of, it's kind of like a sister to Soto and the Uradi's village over in Ethiopia.
It's kind of our long-term goal, dream would be that we could kind of have a sister city relationship between Sandpoint and Soto. And they really have similar feels to them in their own quirky ways. I mean, they're similar towns that, you know, here in Sandpoint, the community is really supportive. Same within Soto.
I know when we talked before, I want to veer off just for a second because you mentioned high density food for children. And I think I remember from another interview that there's this food that is kind of created with native ingredients over in Ethiopia.
Mitten is it's a local baby food and kind of cereal. It can be processed as a milk formula or as a thicker kind of oatmeal type food, and it's made out of 12 different seeds and grains and legumes. It's totally organic. It's gluten-free and dairy-free, so the baby's tummies do a lot better with it. We actually sell it to our local Christian hospital, and the doctors there, two of whom were American doctors, say it's the best formula they've ever seen, and it's actually processed on-site. I mean, it's processed all over Ethiopia. It's an ancient recipe. We didn't come up with it, but in our area, we make it, and we feed it to the kids, and we're able to sell it as a
fundraiser or just cover costs?
Well, I mean, it covers costs, but it's part of the overall self-sustainability
picture you're working on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you also have a goal to expand this whole project, not just in Uradi's village, but all over the continent.
Well, so Uradi's village is the name of the nonprofit. Well, Laita village is actually the name of the village that we're creating right now. the goal of Uradi's village is to begin with Laita village and then be able to replicate that around Ethiopia and Eastern Africa.
Back to local connections.
Yeah, so we've got the event tonight, and then, I think Jennifer mentioned earlier, in March, we had a traditional Ethiopian coffee ceremony, which we partnered with Evans Brothers Coffee to do, which was really great. And that was kind of our introduction to the Sandpoint community. And what I'm really hoping to do this fall sometime is to have another event, maybe a little bit bigger, because we had such a great turnout for that coffee ceremony, maybe something along the lines of a benefit concert or maybe some sort of silent auction, something along those lines. But that's in the works right now, and we'll be keeping the Sandpoint community posted about that. Should be a lot of fun, but that's definitely coming up.
You had a good response with the coffee ceremony the traditional Ethiopian coffee ceremony. What was the fella's name that came over with his wife?
That was Daniel.
Daniel. He came up to the studio.
Yeah, he came up.
He was
great. He's a good guy.
And I'm glad you had a good response, and you're just really trying to keep the community hooked in to the project.
Yeah, and we feel like that's, I mean, that is a part of community building, is just awareness and having our presence be something that contributes to our local community as well as what we're doing in the Soto community. You know, there's so many benefits that come from doing what we do, and just that, like we've been talking about, the give and take. We get new ideas all the time from talking to people, and you never know what talking to someone else about what we're doing is going to do in their life. So we feel like that's always worthwhile, regardless of how it turns out or what particularly comes out of an event. It's just a good thing that's kind of very much in line with, I feel, the Sandpoint community and the people that live here.
Kind of really living your life with purpose.
Right.
That you find essential.
Mm-hmm. And just being very conscious about how you live and what you're doing with your time and your energy.
Making a difference.
Yep.
What are the connections that people can go and find out more about Euryades Village in different ways?
Well, we do have a Facebook page, Euryades Village, Uryadis Village. And then the same for our website is euryadisvillage.org. So if you just search Euryades Village, you're going to come up with our website and also our Facebook page. So anybody that wants to check out our Facebook page. We do post 2 or 3 times a week about just different things that are happening, progress, as well as just interesting information about the Ethiopian culture, the people. So those are probably the 2 main ways to kind of follow what we're doing.
And we have a new video coming out next week. Scott Rulander, who is local video guru, has done a couple of amazing videos for us, and he was with us on our last trip and has a new video that should be out next week. We're excited for it. Updating our progress.
And so people can see that on
the
Facebook page
or on
the website. Yeah. I've seen a couple of Scott's videos, and you know, we love radio. Radio can help us draw pictures, but seeing what's going on the ground is really instructive on what the project's about.
And Jennifer, you take your children over there too. And
I do try to bring a couple of kids when I go. I had a summer vacation, so I had a couple of kids over with me on the last trip. I was able to bring my youngest daughter, Malia, who was actually from Ethiopia, and it was really neat for her to be back and kind of see where she's from and see the amazing country that it is. And that is a part of it for me, to be able to bring the kids.
So real quick before we wrap this up, Eric, you're breaking ground. You have 4 foundations going. You have a cistern system put in. What is the next phase, and when do you see completion, if you can see that, to move into at least one of the buildings, something like that?
Well, by December, we'd like to have the first 4 homes built. And then there's 3 more buildings after that that we need to construct. But hopefully by December, we could have the kids start moving in. Maybe early next year.
When you say homes, how many kids will each structure house?
They're designed for 8 children and a house mother.
So if we can get the 4 up, which I think is a realistic goal at this point, then we hope to have the kids in by Christmas.
And do you have an outdoor kitchen, or is there a kind of a community center where they have the school?
There will be a community center, but for now, or there will also be a kitchen in each house.
Yeah, there's like a little kind of kitchen out in each house, and then there'll be a big community kitchen and community center. And we actually have right now already on the site an outdoor kitchen. So when the kids move, until the big kitchen's built, we have a place that we can cook.
Feed those workers right now.
Yeah.
So what are your needs right now, and how could people that are listening to this that are inspired, how can they help?
You know, our needs are still for building funds. You know, we have the funds for the first 2 buildings signed and sealed. We're still fundraising for the next 2. We have a couple of fundraising events. Like Sarah said, we're going to do 1 here in the fall. I head up to Canada next week and have a fundraiser up in Canada. Then we have a fundraiser in California and one in Holland. So, you know, but really, really our big need right now is for building funds.
And we do have a CrowdRise campaign going, which if you check out our Facebook page, every post that we put up will have a link there. So if someone feels that they would like to contribute to that, there'll be a link. And it'll say, if you just look for one of our posts, it'll say, here's the link for our CrowdRise campaign to build the village. So that's probably the easiest way. And then, you know, contacting any of us if someone has questions or wants to also use our website has a donate now button. So if you just want to go in and just do it, that's another way as well.
Mm-hmm. And as we know, small or large donations all are welcome because
everything
they all
makes,
add
yeah,
up.
Every little penny makes a difference. Mm-hmm. And some of our fundraisers that we do are just, you know, pledges for $10, $20. And when you, you know, times that by 300 people, I mean, it's just huge. And so every penny makes a difference. And it goes so much further in Ethiopia than it goes here.
We had an amazing response at the coffee ceremony. People were really moved by that. And so we had some sponsoring that was going on of the kids. And that was just amazing. People, we weren't asking for that. It was just people seeing what we're doing and seeing what the needs are. It's really not even about us and what we're doing. It's just seeing what is needed to make a difference for those kids.
You know, children have such large hearts. And children here in Sandpoint hear about this. Those are their, you know, friends over there. They just don't know them yet. And children just really open up to that. So that's an added benefit.
They really do. Like when I'm there and if I have some of my kids there, my kids blend in with the kids at our care center and nobody knows who's here or there. Who's, you know, I mean, it's just the kids just kind of become a pack. And it's a really, really neat thing to be a part of. And, you know, like one idea I was going to approach some of our local schools and see if a class would want to sponsor a child because the kids really, it makes kids feel really good to help another kid go to school. And that's something that we all take for granted here. And, you know, our kids take for granted. And for them to go, wait, I can help this child go to school. And hold on a minute. I should be really grateful that I get to go to school. Like it really, you know, it gives back to the kids in our community as well as to the kids there.
Yeah. Gives them an opportunity to care and give. That's really wonderful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's repeat. One really easy way to help support it is happening tonight. And a fun way to help support it, it's called Feed the Kids. And Sarah, hit us again on the details on that.
So Feed the Kids is an event that's going to be happening at 9 o'clock tonight at the Granary District Warehouse. It's put on by Extraordinary Nature, and it's going to be live bands, yoga fire, tribal dance, and DJs. And all the money will be going to this organization, Feed the Kids, that provides high-density nutrition for local kids, as well as supporting what we're doing with Uradi's Village. So that's going to be tonight at 9 o'clock.
Okay.
And you can always go to the website or the Facebook site for uradisvillage.org or on Facebook, Uradi's Village.
And you have a CrowdRise campaign as well. So there's a lot of ways for people to connect, find out more about it. I'd suggest just coming tonight and ability to talk to you guys would be very valuable for folks.
Learn more. Well, it's been wonderful to have you in again. I think this is maybe your third or fourth time. It's always nice. I like to hear how it's going.
Thank you.
It's a wonderful project you're doing. We thank you for having that much heart to take this on, Jennifer and friends. Did I call you components before?
That's okay.
Principals. Thank you again for coming in. We're going to take a little musical break. This is Emmy Lou Harris, who was just last week at the festival at Sandpoint. This is called, and she's singing this with John Denver. I think he wrote the song, Wild Mountain Skies. We'll be right back with more information going on in our community. Stay with us. This is The Morning Show on 88.5 KRFY.